Advent calendars these days, at the risk of sounding like an embittered nostalgist, is that they don't make you wait anymore. Instead, they're a way of giving you 24 small wee presents until you get to Christmas Day. Remember the old Advent calendars, the ones that actually had pictures in them? And you would open it up and it'd be a star or a candle. And even then you got excited about them. And occasionally, people in our house used to have a wee peek because there was a way you could peel the cardboard underneath and try and work out what the picture was going to be in a few days' time. And remember the excitement you used to have on the 24th that had a double door? Do you remember that? I mean, just imagine saying that nowadays. On the 24th had a double door. What, you mean no chocolate? They'd have, oh, just pictures. One of my daughters, has a nail varnish advent calendar. And she gets a new nail varnish capsule every single day leading up to Christmas. And I'm led to believe that by the standards of today, that is not overly indulgent. Oh my goodness me, what's the world coming to? But there's something about Advent that just makes you wait and will do anything to try and make the waiting a bit less hard. Whether it's peeking behind the doors for the 24th or by trying to just cushion the pain by giving somebody a wee pot of nail varnish every single day. And the reason is waiting is hard work. And something that makes us wait is making us do something painful. Middle age is often the act of falsely eliminating waiting from our lives. Remember as a child how you used to wait for things. You used to wait desperately for Christmas Day to come. From the 1st of December, you'd be counting down the sleeps. And then the minute Christmas Day was over, you'd then wait for your birthday to come. Through the year. And when you're middle-aged, you don't wait with the same intensity. Oh, it'll soon be Christmas. You know, nobody gets as excited about their birthday anymore. When you're a child, you used to desperately wait when you're in primary two till the day that you got to be in primary three. And then maybe you're a bit nervous about going from primary seven into first year, but you were desperate to wait to leave school. I was so full of waiting and queuing for things. Remember how you used to be desperate to wait to learn to drive when you were 17? Do you remember that? You'd be counting down the years. And now you're kind of, oh, I've got to drive here or something like that. And when you're middle-aged, we eliminate a lot of that waiting. Because it's really painful. And you'll go out of your way to not to have to wait. Nothing makes time move more slowly than when you're waiting for something. When you're older, it creeps back in again, I think. You wait for hospital appointments. You wait for the results of tests. And nobody ever, ever says this, but it lurks in the back of your mind with a higher volume each day. You do wait. For the day that you die, and think when is that going to happen, and what's that going to be like, but you don't talk about it very much. God inflicts huge amounts of waiting on people at Christmas time. Mary has to wait to give birth, which is 9 hard months, particularly in those days as a third of women would die in childbirth. So she's thinking, what's that going to be like? She spends 3 months of them with her cousin Elizabeth. Plus the waiting of the long journey from Bethlehem down, from Nazareth down to Bethlehem. Then there's Zechariah, who has to wait all the way through the gestation of his son John, unable to speak. And then there's the wise men, who have to wait probably for 2 years to travel all the way across from Persia or from wherever they were to Bethlehem. And God makes these people wait. But there's something about them waiting which opens them to the move of God to faith. That somehow that when Jesus comes, because they have had to wait and this painful process of waiting has happened, they are also more alive to the joy of Jesus coming. There seems to be a link that The pain of waiting heightens the joy of the arrival. And God would rather that life lived at these two extremes of painful, laborious waiting and jubilant joy than somehow compressed into a more boring middle. Mary and Zechariah also do this other thing which heightens the sense of waiting. They tie their waiting to the waiting of the whole people of Israel. They bond with it, they identify with it. It's almost as if to say, as if this time of waiting for this child to come is not long enough, I'm also going to sense the pain of waiting 500 years for the prophets of old's words to become true. And they live inside that pain of waiting. So Zechariah sings, God spoke by the mouth of his holy prophets of old that we should be saved from our enemies. And all the time he's alive to what God has done in the past, to show the mercy promised to our fathers, that he swore to our father Abraham to grant us, that we, being delivered from the hand of our enemies, might serve him without fear. All this time he's engaging with the waiting of hundreds of years of people who have waited for Messiah to come. We have waited for God to give knowledge of salvation to his people in the forgiveness of their sins because of the tender mercy of our God, whereby the sunrise shall visit us from on high to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. And Mary too, though she's probably only 12 or 13 years old, somehow ties herself in with the painful waiting of Israel. And at the end of her song, the Magnificat, she sings, he has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy as he spoke to her father, to Abraham and his offspring forever. And the wise men, they are the ones that wait and wait those 2 years. When they arrive at the place, what do? We hear, great was their joy, and they worshipped Jesus. No one has ever worshipped Jesus up to that point. And in worshipping Jesus, they are also recognizing, firstly and uniquely, that Jesus is also God, because you're not allowed to worship anything apart from God. So there is this link between waiting and the joy of Christmas. And yet what we do too often is we suppress our waiting, and in doing so, suppress our joy. In suppressing our waiting, we are also suppressing our faith in God, and therefore also suppressing our ability to spot when God is doing a new thing. There's a command in one of the Psalms, wait for the Lord. This is a hard command, because it then says, be strong. You need strength to wait. Wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. The verse immediately before is a statement of faith. I believe that I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Psalm 27, verse 13. And then 14 is, wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage, and wait for the Lord. So I want us to ask this morning, what is it you really wait for? Because my suspicion is that we often push that down and don't really acknowledge it. What is it you wait for? Is it for a situation in your family to be healed? Is it for someone you know to find a wholeness that has eluded them? Is it for you to be recognized amongst your peers in a way that hasn't yet happened? Is it for you to find a way of living that is fulfilled rather than dry and scratchy? Just sense, what is it that you wait for? And the thing beneath the thing beneath the thing is actually always a waiting for God. Behind every waiting, there's actually a waiting for something else. And behind that waiting, there's actually a waiting for something else. And behind that waiting, if you keep going back, ultimately, we're always waiting for God. And I want us just to connect with that this morning. Connect with how hard work that is to keep waiting, but to do the work. Because when you've done it, we're ready for God to appear. A number of examples of this that I might think of. One is Nelson Mandela, who waited for 27 years in prison for freedom to come to South Africa for all people. I think of a woman you might not have heard of called Fannie Lou Hamer, who was at the heart of the American Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. She was steeped in the scriptures. She was a Baptist. And she worked with other women for the day when the laws would be changed so they could be fully free. And she lived with a lot of pain. She'd actually worked as a slave, it was said, or as a bonded labourer. She could pick, though she had polio on one leg, she could pick more cotton in one day than anyone else her age. So she knew what hardship was, but she lived with this hope. She coined the phrase, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired." That was her that said that. And yet when she died, people gathered from all over the place to remember this woman who had taught them to hope. There's a woman steeped in the scriptures. Another man is Václav Havel, the Czech poet who became the president of Czechoslovakia, who was in prison for 5 years. And he talked about the nature of hope. And he said, hope is not getting the thing that you hope for. Hope is the day, hoping for the day when you get to the point where you say, now I understand. All this makes sense. God is somewhere here. It's not always getting the thing you want. It's getting to the place where you go, this makes sense. And it's hard work to wait. But the worst thing you can do is push down on your waiting and pretend it isn't there. So wait. Wait along with Mary and Zechariah and the wise men. God needs good waiters. And none of us is any more than 100 years away from paradise. But God will come quicker than even that. Waiting will come to something. And then one day, when we are done with our waiting, we will sit beside Mary, and we will sit beside Zechariah, and we will sit beside the wise men, and we will sing, because God is with us. And he honours our waiting, and he keeps our his promises, and he will not let us go.